Suns Day. Brought to you by Four Peaks Wow Wheat on the home of Phoenix Suns basketball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Suns Day with Burns and Gambo.
5 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show. Happy Wednesday to you. We're live from the Yachin Community Studios on this Suns Day, presented to you by Four Peaks. As tonight at 8 o'clock, Gambo mentioned it in the last segment or two of the show. Yeah, we're excited about tonight. Yeah, there are missing guys for both teams. Yeah, it's not the Suns versus the Jazz at full strength. We'd all love to see, I think, a game between these two teams at full strength. That would be something to really look forward to. But, and we're not just saying this, truly, every time the Phoenix Suns are on, every time I want to watch, you want to watch. It's tremendously compelling. It's very entertaining. They play such a selfless, hard-nosed brand of basketball, and you just know that no matter what the situation is going into the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, the Suns are typically going to put forth their best effort in those final 5 minutes. So it's always it's always worth watching the games because you just want to see what they're going to come up with next.
Their record in games that are decided by like 8 points or less is something ridiculous. Right? Like it's something crazy. Their record in games that are decided. Their record overall is just silly. It's just how 800 winning percentage.
800 winning percentage, yes, sir.
But man, it's amazing just the close games. You know, you think about even you go back to some of the games that they lost that came down to those single digits. I mean, Harrison Barnes beat him with a shot at the buzzer, and I think so did John Morant.
It was John Morant. Yep, in the Grizzlies game.
Harrison Barnes. Remember Harrison Barnes?
Yep. Good memory on both of those. Yep.
Yeah. That's how they lost. They lost on these buzzer beating shots that these other teams. You know, not that they got lucky, but they made the shot. Congrats. But other than that, they're just kicking everybody's ass when it comes to the final. No, I'm not saying just turn on the game for the final 5 minutes.
Oh, no.
It's fun to watch to see if they can get to. But if it is close in the final 5 minutes, they have been tremendous.
All right, let's talk about the trade deadline because it's coming up.
Okay, let's do it.
On February 10th. And, it remains to be seen what, if anything, the Suns will do. It was just about this time a year ago, about 2 weeks before the deadline, if memory serves, that they went out and got Torrey Craig in, it wasn't exactly a deadline-beating move, but it was a trade before the deadline. We've talked a lot, Gambo, about what to anticipate with the deadline on February 10th, and it doesn't sound like you're anticipating a whole lot at all.
No, I'm actually at the point now where I'm gonna rule out Eric Gordon. I'm gonna rule out Eric Gordon as a guy. He's a big name. A lot of people have talked about Eric Gordon, but I don't really believe that he is on the Suns' radar. I don't think they're gonna get him. I don't think they're gonna try to get him. There's a lot of names that get bandied about. The trade deadline excites people, but there aren't a lot of meaningful trades that go down. There just aren't. So with Gordon having money on his contract this year and money next year and being a two guard and in the playoffs when Devin plays all those minutes and Chris plays all those minutes, and I just don't think that Eric Gordon is a guy that they're going to pursue. So I'm scratching Eric Gordon off my list of potential guys that the Suns may be able to get.
Look, I'll be honest with you. That one always seemed very pie in the sky to me to begin with, just in the sense that I never was quite sure if the Suns had enough assets to be able to make that happen, even if they wanted to. You know, I would think Eric Gordon would be a very popular guy around the deadline, and the Suns, you know, unless they're throwing in every single first-round pick from now until the end of time, which I would not be opposed to, by the way, in the name of making this roster better, it just didn't seem like there was enough there. What they have to offer is questionable in terms of how desirable it is. You know, Dario Saric and Jalen Smith and multiple first-round picks, I just don't know if that's enough. You know, I think that's enough to make a deal. I don't know if that's enough to make an Eric Gordon deal. I think you're just going to require more than that. So, if you want to rule that one out, I'm not opposed to that, and I understand your reasoning for ruling it out. I do hope that the Suns, and I think they do. I know they do. I don't think they do. I know they do. Recognize how unique this opportunity is that they're in, and I don't want them to do something for the sake of doing something, but I also hope that they do approach it in the sense that we've got a real chance to win a championship. Yeah. And if there's anything we think we might need 2 months from now, now is the time to go get it, either through the trade deadline or the buyout market, because they are in a very special spot right now.
But they love this team. They love this team, and they feel they. You heard James Jones. He had a comment earlier when he was on with us talking about the team that I put together before the season. That's my team, you know. And there's a belief by a lot of GMs. I think James is of the belief too that you know, what you're getting at the deadline and buyout market is you're getting a player that somebody else doesn't want. And, you know, they want their guys. You know, they've done a little tinkering with the roster with Biombo coming in, but they're not going out and getting Torrey Craig and they're not getting Eric Gordon. And I think it's more than likely that they don't do anything. If they did do something, I think it would be small, but I'm not expecting anything significant. I'd be really surprised at that. I think it's exciting to talk about trades, but very few meaningful trades are ever really made. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
do everything you can to make sure that you are set for a run in the playoffs, that you have insurance policies in place and whatever you think you may need, go get. It's just, I just don't know that I see that happening.
Look, I'm going to play the soundbite that you referred to a second ago. This was James Jones on with us earlier today.
I'm focused on our guys and how we can improve internally. But I'll always say, like, this: the team I assemble in the summer is the team that I believe in. And the longer we play together, the better we are.
And that's fine. And far be it for me to argue with James Jones, given that he just got a multi-year contract extension as the general manager of the Suns. I go back to last year's NBA Finals run. I go back to last year's playoffs. And with the Dario Saric injury, it was very easy to Monday morning quarterback it. And it was very easy to second guess, or in the case of me, easy to kind of first guess, hey, this was kind of why I wanted you to go get a backup big at the trade deadline for the emergency that you couldn't predict was going to happen. For a Dario Saric torn ACL, who could have thought that was going to happen in the middle of the playoffs? It did, and I just don't want the Suns to be caught like that again. You know, I don't want the Suns to, oh, no, man, we're good. This roster we put together is great. I did all my work in the summer. This is the best we're going to do right here. I'm all about buying insurance policies this year for the accidents that you don't know you're going to happen, that haven't happened yet, and I don't want the Suns to ignore that. They did it last year. I don't know if it cost them a title or not, but I don't want them to do it again this year. That's all I'm asking. That's all I want on this one.
Yeah, I think the one position everybody's going to look at is back up to Book with Landry Shamet. But when Book comes off the floor, that's when the rest of the team gets to score. You know, when Chris is on the floor, he's not looking to score. He's a facilitator. He's a playmaker. He's getting everybody else involved. When you go to the bench, you have a dynamic lineup, right? It's not built around Devin Booker. It's built around a bunch of guys getting shots. And so it's not running sets for a two guard like they do for Book. So I don't think that they're really worried about, you know, Landry still spaces the floor. He gets out in transition. I don't think, you know, he's not having a great year. I get it.
No, he's not.
But when that unit goes out there, it's very much about campaign. Campaign's going to look to score. So it's not about, you know, the catch and shoot opportunities. And so, you know, Cam played his best when he was with a Javon Carter, because that's a non-usage guy, a guy that doesn't need the ball. I don't think you're going to go get just a scorer for that second unit to replace Landry and take away from what campaign does well.
No, and I'm not, and again, I know you're kind of circling back to Eric Gordon, and I'm not necessarily talking, in fact, I'm really not talking about that at all. I don't know what I'm talking about. But I know, you know, it's sort of that definition. I don't know how to define it, but I'll know it when I see it. You know, last year, I knew it was a backup center. I knew that's what I wanted. And every time we talked about names, you'd say, yeah, not this guy. Yeah, not that guy. But man, in the middle of June, in the middle of July, it would have been nice to have one of those guys, even if for 10 minutes a night. And that's what I'm referring to here, whether it's for Landry Shamet, whether it's as a backup four in case something happens. I just want to make sure everything is covered for this team. Now, you mentioned James earlier with us, and yeah, we talked to him a lot about the trade deadline.
I mean, I always love that question. People are always like, how aggressive will you be at the trade deadline, and how aggressive will you? And I'm always the same. I like my team. I like what we have. If opportunities come to improve my team, I'll look at them. But every team's trying to do the same thing at the trade deadline. So unless you're catching someone who absolutely does not want to compete, you're really talking about lateral moves. And, you know, I trust our continuity and our flow.
And besides, Gambo, I keep circling back to what dominated our conversation about this topic yesterday, the buyout market. It's not so much the trade market. It's the buyout market. And we talked about that a couple of times yesterday. I'm very interested in the names that become available there.
Sure.
Because I do think the Suns, in the terms of money and their proximity to a title, I think they offer a lot on the buyout market that maybe they didn't have last year. Because last year, there was uncertainty about their ability to compete for a championship. And there wasn't a ton of cash available to lure a guy in here. Now with this, what's left of their mid-level exception, that and the fact that we know they're close to a title because they've got the best record in the NBA, I'm less focused on trades and more focused on guys who get bought out, because I think the Suns become a very, very appealing destination for a guy who gets bought out of his contract.
Yeah, and for them, they have the exception, the part of the exception from JaVale McGee, right? They paid JaVale $5, $6 million. That was about a $10 million exception. They've got about $4 million left. They have the ability to pay more money for a player than just about anybody else does because of that $4 million on the exception. So keep your eye on that. I think they'll look at it again. You know, probably unlikely. You know, you look at the buyout market and everybody gets, it's still a player getting let go from a team that doesn't want him anymore. Possible. But the remember this too, the Suns do not have an open roster spot this year. They'd have to cut somebody. They do not have an open roster spot.
Is that a hang up for you? Is that a problem?
No, I mean, no, they could do it. I mean, they don't have the open roster spot, but that doesn't mean that they can't do it. Of course they could. You know, if there's a guy looking for a fresh start and he's not happy with the team and he's not getting playing time and you think he can come in, yeah, okay. I mean, you know, remember Blake Griffin last year, but he hasn't even been a factor or playing much this year. So you got to look at who's getting bought out. Is it somebody that could help you, or is it just a player that another team doesn't want and wants to get rid of because he can't help them?
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, at one point during the season, we were calling for Steve Keim to be executive of the year. And while he's made great moves, when you revisit the last draft class, there are questions still. Though a recent report from ESPN.com suggests that the draft class was maybe a little bit better than you think. And we'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
It's not a great ranking, but it's not bad either. It's not. When Gambo sent me the link to this story today, I clicked on it and I was kind of holding my breath, like, "Oh boy, here we go." You know, we're talking about a Steve Keim draft. Let's see what ESPN thinks. It's not great, but it's not bad. According to ESPN.com, and I think it was in conjunction with Pro Football Focus, so it's very PFF kind of centric. The Arizona Cardinals, their draft from this past year, 13th best in the NFL. Only the, let's see, Cowboys, Bears, Broncos, Eagles, Chargers, Dolphins, Lions, Browns, Raiders, Chiefs, Texans, and Patriots did better. Does that seem right to you? Does it feel like the Cardinals had the 13th best draft in the NFL last year?
You know, I don't know. I don't know all the team's drafts, you know, 1 through 7 and things like that. What I do know is that they got production out of Marco Wilson, who was, a fourth-round pick and ended up starting a cornerback. That's rare to get a guy that late in the draft that ends up starting and being a big part of your defense. Rondale Moore, the wide receiver, was very good for them at times. I thought that Kliff could have found other ways to get him involved. I thought he could have been a lot more dynamic in the offense.
I mean,
he's a tremendous talent with all this speed. But, you know, he was a second-round pick, 49th overall out of Purdue. So when you have your second-round pick that's playing a lot, your fourth-round picks that's playing a lot, they used Tay Gowan in the trade. He was a sixth-rounder. Zaven Collins, your first round, he played not as much as, you know, other guys did. You look at Micah Parsons, the linebacker of the Dallas draft, and he was fantastic. But the Cardinals did not get a lot of production out of Zaven Collins. But Rondale Moore was good when he played. He gave them an element of speed, and they tried to use him in a bunch of different ways. You've talked about maybe he could be a guy to replace his Christian Kirk if they lose him. Yeah, possibly. He's an extreme. He's a good talent. And Marco was good, and I think that, you know, he's going to get better. It didn't seem like a great draft. It seemed like a good draft. And drafts are hard. I mean, if they're 13th, they're in the upper half of draft class. There was a lot of teams that had classes that were considered worse than Arizona's.
It's funny. I'm thinking back to conversations that we had about, and we had so many conversations about the Cardinals, and I'm thinking in particular about conversations that we've had about the drafts, right? And at like the midpoint of the season, so somewhere around October, November, we started looking back at the drafts, the past drafts of Steve Keim, going, you know, on second thought, man, some of these drafts aren't so bad at all. And we said in the moment, man, you know, Josh Jones, that seems like that's working out okay. And Byron Murphy, that seems like it's working out okay. Zach Allen, that seems like it's working out. Christian Kirk, et cetera. You see where I'm going with this?
Sure.
And like everything else with the Cardinals, boy, our impression of them at the midway point of the season, by the time we got to the end of the season, we had really drastically changed what we thought about things. Now, at the end of the season, Josh Jones, suddenly that pick doesn't look so hot because he didn't finish the season very well. Byron Murphy still looks good. He faded at the end of the season. He did not finish it very well at all, certainly not as strongly as he started the season. Marco Wilson faded a little bit. And then the biggest, kind of most baffling thing of them all, and I'll get to Zaven Collins in a second, is how can a guy like Isaiah Simmons, who just played so many snaps all year long, was a important, crucial part of their defense. Man, he was barely out on the field in the most important game of the season.
Yeah, for a guy that had over 100 tackles and 4 forced fumbles, and the versatility for him, right? I mean, he can cover running backs, he can cover tight ends, he can play cornerback at time. I mean, I don't get it. I think maybe they valued the veterans a little bit more, which I don't know. I mean, maybe Vance just valued the veteran guys. Why Zaven Collins didn't play a lot? Why did Isaiah not play a lot last year? Maybe it's a lot to pick up in their system. It's a lot to pick up. I don't know. That's got to change, right? I mean, you draft a player in the first round. When you draft them, you expect them to play, like Micah Parsons with Dallas. You expect them to play. Jamar Chase, look at the impact he had. When you draft guys in the second round, you expect them to play. Third round, okay, what am I getting in the third round? Am I getting a guy who could be a backup? You know, sure. Fourth round, fifth round, sixth round, probably guys that are going to play special teams and be backups. But first and second round, I almost feel like you got to count on those guys to contribute right away these days.
You do, and I understand, you know, when you're taking two off-the-ball linebackers like that in the middle of the defense, that there is a lot to pick up, that there is a lot to learn. Isaiah Simmons, man, his snap percentages throughout the course of the year, he was in the 90s, 100%, 99, 98, 91, 100, 100, and then just this precipitous drop all the way down to 32 in the playoff game it still continues to baffle me, because by that point, a fully healthy Isaiah Simmons, a number one pick, eighth pick overall in that draft, ninth pick overall in that draft, I'd have to go back and look to remind myself to be sure. At that point, in a playoff game, he should be one of your studs. He should be one of your stars. He should be one of your main guys defensively, not somebody who's playing 19 snaps in your first playoff game since 2016. The Zaven Collins thing, man, I've had so many issues with the Zaven Collins thing from day one. I don't know if it does anybody any good for me to go over it again, but there's no question that the drafting of players and the usage of players, and this is not a Dave Burns original thought here, a lot of people have made this comment. Man, the level of communication between Steve Keim, the drafter, and the defensive coaches for the Cardinals has to get better. There has to be an improvement in terms of, hey, man, I'm giving you good football players, you've got to use them. Or, hey, you got to give us football players that better fit the mold of what we're trying to do. Go get these types of guys instead of those types of guys. It's because somewhere in the last couple of years, it feels like that's been lost in translation a little bit with these two players that Zaven Collins barely played this year. It's got to get better going forward. You can't have number one picks playing that infrequently for you.
Well, especially when you remember with Zaven, starter from day one, Jordan Hicks, like,
I hated
maybe we'll
that.
Trade him. Like,
yeah.
Like the thought process when they drafted Zaven Collins was
so flawed.
You're gonna play day one. Like, yep. Day one, you're going to be the guy. And then after a while, it's like, well, it's a difficult position, and you got to, you know, call in the plays. And, you know, and all of a sudden, Jordan Hicks was playing more and more and more, and Zaven got phased out. Listen, I think the kid's a tremendous run stuffer. He's a big, strong kid. He can go sideline to sideline. And maybe he wasn't capable of setting up the defense and things like that right now. But I would expect that by next year, after a second training camp, I think he will be.
Better be. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show earlier today, we had newly extended Suns GM James Jones on the show. He had a lot to say about the extension, about the state of the organization, about how he goes about doing his job. You'll hear from him coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
Suns Day, brought to you by Four Peaks Wow Wheat, on the home of Phoenix Suns basketball, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Suns Day with Burns and Gambo.
I mean, I always love that question. People always like, how aggressive will you be at the trade deadline, and how aggressive will you? And I'm always the same. I like my team. I like what we have. If opportunities come to improve my team, I'll look at them. But every team's trying to do the same thing at the trade deadline. So unless you're catching someone who absolutely does not want to compete, you're really talking about lateral moves. And, you know, I trust our continuity and our flow.
If you've been with us for a while now, we played that soundbite just a little bit ago because we were talking about some of Gambo's information and thoughts going into the trade deadline, which is on February 10th. It's just a couple of weeks away. And that, of course, is the voice of Suns general manager James Jones, who shared his thoughts with us about the trade deadline, almost kind of scoffing at the notion of being aggressive at the trade deadline. Hey, I put this team together in the summer. I like this team. I like this team a lot. Of course, he's already added a player in Bismack Biyombo, and that guy's a very important player for the Suns moving forward. We're going to see him tonight get a ton of minutes. We talked to James about a lot of stuff today, and James is... We've had a lot of conversations about James, frankly, the last couple of days, given that he's gotten the contract extension, given that there are so many things that he's done right in building this organization and creating this culture. And if nothing else, Gambo, it's good to see James Jones be rewarded for all that.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy who came in, worked with Ryan McDonough side by side for a little bit, and then he was the guy that they decided to go with. And he didn't have the experience. What was interesting when we talked about James was, hey, you know, he didn't want to be a coach. Like, he knew from day one he didn't want to be a coach. A lot of players, they want to be coaches. Look at Steve Nash with the Brooklyn Nets right now. Jared Dudley, our guy's an assistant coach with Jason Kidd with the Dallas Mavericks. So a lot of players go into coaching. There's a lot of money to be made in coaching. I understand why. James didn't really have that feeling that he wanted to coach. He wanted to do something in basketball. He didn't know it was going to be a GM, but he figured, what, somewhere between an owner and the front office?
Yeah, here's what he said about that.
I think my first year in the NBA, I knew I didn't want to be a coach. It's like a player's life on steroids. You know, you're there a lot earlier than the players. You stay after. You get up early to prepare, and it's just a constant grind, almost a 24-hour news cycle. So I knew early I didn't want to be a coach.
And he said he really hadn't considered the front office role.
The front office isn't something I thought about in this capacity ever, really. I knew I wanted to stay in the team environment. I wanted to be somewhere between an owner and a front office executive. And so I've just been blessed to be in a position where being a part of the team and helping out has kind of crafted or plotted the path for me that eventually led me to be in the GM.
Say it's worked out pretty well for him so far.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely. Changing the culture of an organization is not an easy thing to do, especially an organization that, I mean, with the Suns. I mean, it was poor. It was piss poor. It was terrible. And what he did was pretty remarkable to change that culture so quickly. And part of it is addition by subtraction. You know, part of the moves when you say, what's the 10 greatest moves he made? Well, part of the great moves that James Jones made were getting rid of guys, getting rid of T.J. Warren. Even though you may not like the trade, getting rid of T.J. Warren helped a lot. Getting rid of Josh Jackson. You had to get rid of Josh Jackson. Unfortunately, the Suns made a huge mistake in gifting those players all of those minutes right from the get-go. You got drafted in the first round, come in and play right away. Now, this is different from the NFL. In the NBA, it's much different. These players felt like, you know, like they had arrived. They didn't feel like they had to work that hard. So a lot of the changing of the culture had to do, to me, addition by subtraction, getting rid of players, not just adding players.
Yeah, and a lot of it, too, has to do with the guy who's in the room coaching the team as well. I mean, Monty Williams and the kind of impact he can have on a Josh Jackson, right? We never really got to see that. Monty Williams, you know, how would those young guys who were gifted those minutes early, how would they have done when they had an experienced, seasoned veteran coach in the room and not somebody who was breaking in their first year as an NBA head coach? I think makes a difference. Leadership makes a difference. Coaching, I think, always makes a difference, which is why Monty, you know, we talk about all the great moves that James Jones has made. Getting Monty Williams, keeping Monty Williams from going to the LA Lakers, having him as the culture creator, if you will, for the Suns, was one of the best things that he ever did, because it kind of took that uncertainty and inexperience out of the equation when it comes to the head coaches. Because I do think a lot of those players, quite frankly, took advantage of the Earl Watsons of the world and the Igor Kokoshkovs of the world and those inexperienced coaches who really didn't know how to handle guys like that, right? And maybe too often kind of gave in to guys like that.
Listen, I think, you know, Sarver finally admitted, you know, on an interview with us that, you know, I finally got it right, you know, in hiring Monty. And for years they would hire inexperienced coaches. And, you know, the thought was, you know, a young coach with a young team was the better fit. And he was wrong. And he felt that, you know, a young coach with a young team, a veteran coach for a veteran team. And so he didn't put two and two together for a long time. A veteran coach with a young team can work. And, you know, eventually they rounded it out by getting more stable veterans around the younger players, quality veterans, not the Trevor Arizas of the world. They were only here for a paycheck, and that's how it all turned around.
Yeah, and that's why James, when he was on with us earlier, talked about how coaches and players deserve a lot of the credit for all of this.
The players and the coaches, those that are executing the strategy, the day-to-day management of the routine and the game plans, they deserve all the credit, and my job is just to sit back and try to absorb all that information and assist when I can and create an environment where they all feel free to be creative and thrive. And if I can do that, I can do my part and you can have success, which I think we're all seeing.
That's funny. In all the conversation that we've had about James Jones, you were talking about the 10 best moves that he's ever made. We have a story up at ArizonaSports.com from our own Kellen Olson. And he writes about James and the impact he's had and all the great moves that he's made. But even he points out that, you know, not every move James Jones has made has worked out. He is not batting 1,000 as the general manager of the Phoenix Suns. And I'm not bringing this up to point out any flaws in what he's done necessarily. But just to you know, if you're looking at the current state of the Phoenix Suns, one of the big moves that has not worked out as well as we had hoped it would is the Landry Shamet addition. And while he's fine, I don't think he's been as impactful as anybody had hoped that he would. And certainly if they're not going to make any moves around the deadline, either via trade or buyout, the improvement of Landry Shamet becomes essential for this team to fortify their position going into the playoffs. He has to play better than he's played so far.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the years committed and the salary for Landry, I mean, you know, that's a lot of money. I mean, they're paying $9 million next year, $10 million the year after, $11 million. So he signed a four-year contract with Philly, and then he signed that, I think, 3 years with the Suns. And yeah, and that's a lot of money. So they want to get more production out of him because he certainly has not been good. He has not been good. Now you stuck with him for at least the next couple of years.
Yeah.
And you know, listen, he's a good player. It just hasn't worked for him so far. I wouldn't give up on him.
Oh no one's. I'm just.
But it has not worked out. You're right. Has not been that is not one that has worked out. Definitely.
And if we're talking about another, you know, kind of thing to keep an eye on when we're talking about the tenure of James Jones, how they handle the DeAndre Ayton extension this offseason, what happens there? Do they max him out this offseason? Has he earned it? Do they look at him and say, wow, man, we've had so much success with the Bismack Biyombos and the JaVale McGees of the world. Does that solidify an argument against paying DeAndre Ayton max money? But that becomes, if we start talking about the tenure of James Jones, that becomes a very important piece to that puzzle when talking about making the right choice. The choice that he makes, that they make about DeAndre Ayton, going to be a big one coming up this offseason, a huge one for the
team.
Boy,
I know. And that's, you know, that's one you just, you know, they decided to punt on it and wait, and they did not want to bid against themselves, and they didn't want to give him a max, and so they didn't give him a max. And DeAndre, you know, wants to be valued and all of that stuff. That's great. I said all along, and I think you did too, I think he's a max player. But if you ask me right now, do I think they're going to give it to him or not? I have no idea.
Sammy Hagar and George Thorogood are heading to Akshin Pavilion for their Crazy Times tour. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m., but you can win a pair now by visiting the contest page on arizonasports.com. Coming up on the Burns and Gambo show, the football world was pretty surprised yesterday when head coach Sean Payton walked away from his job with the Saints. What does it mean for the league? What does it mean for a team a year from now that might want to hire him as their coach? How much is it going to cost? That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
Well, I know what's not on tonight.
Yeah, U of A.
You got to watch them, Burnsy. You got to watch them.
God, couldn't have been more wrong. Like, they've been good. The one time I kind of, you know, push you into watching them because I've enjoyed watching them all year. They lay an absolute goose egg. They let you down.
They let you down, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
they went ELO on me. Don't let me down.
They were the Electric Light Orchestra. That's okay. I'm gonna keep watching them. I'm slowly reacquiring my taste for college basketball. It has been pretty dormant for the last 2 years or so.
Well,
so,
last night's game didn't do anything to help you get it back.
Not really, though I do enjoy that wacky Dave Pasch, Bill Walton back and forth. Although sometimes Bill Walton is just
sometimes.
A little much. He's a little.
Sometimes I like it and sometimes like, oh my God.
He's a little
okay,
much.
Okay, enough is enough. Enough.
Just
enough.
Just call the game. Just call the game. Please.
Right.
Poor Dave Pasch, always trying to grab the wheel back from Bill Walton and just call a game.
And somehow they had a Danny Ainge reference last night. They did. I swear they had a Danny Ainge reference. Somebody took a shot with, like, you know, so quick into the shot clock, and Walton brought up Danny Ainge.
Of course he did.
Yep.
Tonight, what's on is the Suns and the Utah Jazz. Now, it's an 8 o'clock start. And you'll hear it here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. And we'll be back in here tomorrow talking about that. Again, the latest on the injury front for that. No new news from the Suns in the regards that Ayton is out, Crowder's out, JaVale McGee is out, Campaign is out. Gambo, you have suggested that it could be very soon for DeAndre Ayton to return, maybe Sunday, maybe earlier, right?
Yes. I'm thinking Sunday against San Antonio, just from what I'm hearing. There is a game before that. There's a game against Minnesota on Friday. But I'm going to say that DeAndre will be back. Could be Friday, but lean toward my lean is he's going to play Sunday. He won't play Friday.
For the Jazz, they've officially ruled out Donovan McNabb.
Wow.
My goodness.
Listen, speaking about two sports stars,
woo.
You know?
I slipped into autopilot a little too soon, didn't I? Come on, Dave.
At least you caught that.
Yeah, at least I did, right? The show ends in 5 minutes. Not now, Dave. Finish strong. I'm talking to myself now.
I think I would have picked that up within a second. I think I would have picked up that Donovan McNabb reference.
Yeah, well, I know, but I caught myself, which means it shouldn't count as an error. Donovan Mitchell has been ruled out tonight, as has Rudy Gobert. But everybody else, we think, for the Utah Jazz, going to play. You can text us your thoughts on this game. The FanDuel text line is open for you right now. 620-620. It's always open for you during the Burns and Gambo show. Anytime you want to text us your thoughts on what we're talking about, the FanDuel text line at 620-620. When talking about trading draft picks for a coach, it is not without precedent in this league. In fact, it's happened quite a few times in this league. It happened with John Gruden when he was traded to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and $8 million changed hands as he went to Tampa Bay. Mike Holmgren was traded to the Seattle Seahawks for a second-round pick. Bruce Arians, when he retired but was still under contract with the Cardinals, signed with the Bucks for a swap of day three draft picks. And yeah, Gambo, I Googled it, and you were absolutely right. Parcells and the Jets claimed that Belichick was still under contract to the Jets. Paul Tagliabue agreed, and back in 2000, the Patriots gave the Jets a first-round draft pick in 2000 for the right to hire Bill Belichick. A common thread here is
I remember that
all of those coaches that were given up for draft picks, they ended up being worth it when it was all said and done.
They could have gave five first-round draft picks for Belichick. It would have been right.
So when the conversation turns to Sean Payton, and whether a year from now he's going to be worth draft pick compensation to be able to sign him away from the Saints, because if he unretires a year from now, he's still their property. He's under contract for him for three more years.
Right.
Hell yeah, he's worth a draft pick or two to go get him. You better believe he is.
Yeah, but you know, you're also going to have to turn around and pay him. I mean, he made $10 million this year. He's going to get more than that. You're talking about $12 to $15 million likely is what you would have to trade. What you would have to also pay him. So you got to trade for him, then you got to pay him. And look, I think, you know, if you get the right player, you get the right coach, then you get the right coach. The things that's fascinating about Payton to me was what I brought up yesterday. The worst record he had in all those years that he was there, right? What was his first year there? 2016?
2006.
I don't know why I said 16. 2006. The worst record he had was 7-9.
Yep.
That was his worst record, was 7-9. It's what every owner wants. Competitive every year, chance to go to the playoffs, chance to win a Super Bowl every year. If you could pick that, that's what you want. You don't want the 3-13, 4-12. Well, now it wouldn't be that because there's 17 games. But you know what I'm saying. The 3-4-5 win seasons in which you're picking in the top 10 in the draft, owners want what Sean Payton delivered to New Orleans. A chance every year.
And that's what it gives you. A chance every single year. Now, there's a couple of things to consider with Sean Payton, and this is not necessarily just the Cardinals conversation a year from now, though I would think the Cardinals, if things don't work out with Cliff in the final year of his deal, should be very interested in at least thinking about Sean Payton if he's available. A couple things to consider about that. Number one, the draft picks. You mentioned that. Number two, the salary. That's definitely going to be a thing. He's going to get paid an absolute fortune. Number three is control. He has been in charge of all football decisions, basically, for the New Orleans Saints since he got there. Any owner that is hiring him is giving him control of football operations. He's not answering to a general manager.
Nope.
It's his show. And you know, a lot of people who are tying the Cowboys to Sean Payton a year from now wonder if Jerry Jones would give him control. And to be perfectly honest, if he comes to the Cardinals, I would wonder how that dynamic with Steve Keim would work out, because I would assume Sean Payton would want control.
Yeah, he would. But wait till he gets a gig. Wait till he gets a taste of this TV gig. You work. Bill Cowher. Everybody thought Bill Cowher was going to be in TV for a year or two and then go coach the Giants. Every year we kept thinking Bill Cowher was coming back. You know what? He didn't come back. Wait, you're going to pay me all of this money to work once a week on TV? I don't want to. What am I going to do? Go back to coaching for? I don't need that. These guys are making millions and millions of dollars doing television. Why do they want to go back to coaching when they can make all that money to work once a week? They love that gig.
And maybe he'll step away and realize the grass is greener on the other side of the camera. Maybe he will. That's going to do it for us. We're out of here. Looks like Tim Ring is coming up next. We're back tomorrow. It's straight up 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.